At the Parthenon in Athens, every fourth year was celebrated by the Pan-Athenic processions in honor of Athens. The Incas of Peru in South America and the Mayas and Toltecs in Central America observed the synodical revolution of Venus and the Venus year in addition to the solar year. They also calculated by groups of five Venus years equal to 8 years of 365 days. Like the Egyptians and the Greeks, the Mayas observed the four-year cycles, from the inferior to the superior and from the superior to the inferior conjunctions of Venus. The Incas correctly marked the Venus calendar by tying knots in their quipus, and the Mayas, in the Dresden Codex, correctly gave the length of the Venus synodical cycle as 584 days. 9. The astronomical observations of the Mayas were so precise that in computing the solar year, they arrived at figures not only more accurate than the Julian year, but also more accurate than the Gregorian year, introduced in Europe in 1582, 90 years after the discovery of America, which is our calendar year today. 10. All this proves that the Venus calendar preserved its religious significance for a long time, down to the end of the Middle Ages and the discovery of America, and even thereafter, but that already in the 8th century before the present era an 8 or double 4-year cycle of Venus was observed in time reckoning and therefore must have been established in the celestial sphere. A few decades after the discovery of America, the Augustinian friar Ramon y Zamora wrote that the Mexican tribes held the morning star in great veneration and kept a precise record of its appearance, so exact was the book record of the day when it appeared and when it concealed itself, that they never made mistakes. This was a very old custom originating in a past when Venus moved on an elongated orbit. The movements of Venus were carefully watched by the ancient astronomers of Mexico, India, Iran, and Babylonia. Temple observatories for the cult of the planets were built in both hemispheres. The Bumut or high places so often mentioned in the scriptures were observatories as well as places for offerings to the planet gods, chiefly Venus, Baal. On these high places idolatrous priests, ordained by the erring kings of Judah, burned incense to Baal, to the sun, and the moon, and to the planets. In the second half of the second millennium and in the beginning of the first millennium, Venus was still a comet, and though a comet can have a circular orbit, there is such a comet in the solar system. Venus was not then moving on a circular orbit as it does now. Its orbit crossed the orbit of the Earth and endangered it every 50 years. Since, by the second half of the 8th century before the present era, Venus' cycle was similar to what it is today, it follows that some time before then Venus must have changed its orbit and achieved its present circular path between Mercury and the Earth and become the morning and evening star. The irregularities in the movements of Venus must have been observed by the ancients. The data in the ancient records must differ of Jupiter and Saturn, very much from the figures on Venus movements given at the head of this section. Venus moves irregularly. In the library of Assurbanipal in Nineveh were stored astronomical books of his and of previous ages. In the ruins of this library Sir Henry Ludd found the Venus tablets. There arose the question, from what period do the observations of these tablets date? Schiaparelli investigated this problem and as an example of method his work is excellent. He decided that the inquiry could be limited to the 7th and 8th centuries. The year formula of an early king, Amisaduga, was discovered on one of the tablets, and since then the tablets are usually ascribed to the first Babylonian dynasty. However, a scholar has offered evidence to the effect that the year formula of Amisaduga was inserted by a scribe in the 7th century. If the tablets originated in the beginning of the second millennium, they would prove only that Venus was even then an errant comet. Following are a few excerpts from the Venus tablets. On the 11th of Sivan, Venus disappeared in the west, remaining absent in the sky for 9 months and 4 days, and on the 15th of Adar she was seen in the east. The next year, on the 10th of Arasaimna, Venus disappeared in the east, remaining absent months and 6 days in the sky, and was seen on the 16th of Tebet in the west. The following year Venus disappeared in the west on the 26th of Elul, remaining absent from the sky for 11 days, and was seen on the 7th of Intercalary Elul in the east. The year thereafter Venus disappeared in the east on the 9th of Nisan, remaining absent for 5 months and 16 days, and was seen on the 25th of Elul in the west. In the fifth year of the observations, Venus disappeared in the west on the 5th of Iyar, Ijar, remaining absent from the sky for 7 days, and reappeared in the east on the 12th of Iyar. The same year it disappeared on the 20th of Tebet in the east, remaining absent from the sky 1 month, and on the 21st day of Sabat, Shevat, it appeared in the west, and so on. How explain these observations of the ancient astronomers? Modern astronomers and historians have asked. Were they written in a conditional form, if Venus disappeared on the 11th of Sivan? No, they were expressed categorically. The observations were inaccurately registered, decided some authors. However, inaccuracy may account for a few days' difference but not for a difference of months. The invisibility of Venus at superior conjunction is given as 5 months 16 days instead of the correct difference of 2 months 6 days, noted the translators of the text, wonderingly. The period between the heliacal setting of Venus and its rise is 72 days. But in the Babylonian Assyrian astrological texts, the period varies from 1 month to 5 months, too long and too short. The observations were defective, wrote another scholar. The impossible interval shows that the data are not trustworthy. Obviously, the days of the month have been mixed up. As the impossible intervals show, the months are also wrong, wrote still another author. It is difficult to imagine how such obvious errors could have been committed. The dates are written in a contemporary document, they are not a poetical composition but a dry record, and each item in the record is stated in dates as well as in the number of days between the dates. Similar difficulties are encountered by the scholars who try to understand the Hindu tables of the movements of the planets. The only explanation proposed is, all the manuscripts are completely corrupted. The details referring to Venus are very difficult to unriddle. No attention at all was paid to the actual movements in the sky. The Babylonians did not note these irregular movements merely as matters of factual interest. They were dismayed by them. In their prayers they expressed this dismay: O Ishtar, Queen of all peoples! Thou art the light of heaven and earth. At the thought of thy name the heaven and the earth quake, and the spirits of the earth falter. Mankind payeth homage unto thy mighty name, for thou art great, and thou art exalted. All mankind, the whole human race, boweth down before thy power. How long wilt thou tarry, O Lady of heaven and earth? How long wilt thou tarry, O Lady of all fights and O the battle? O thou glorious one, that art raised on high, that art firmly established, O valiant Ishtar, great in thy might. Bright torch of heaven and earth, light of all dwellings, terrible in the fight, one who cannot be opposed, strong in the battle. O whirlwind, that roarest against the foe and cuttest off the mighty. O furious Ishtar, summoner of armies. As long as Venus returned at regular intervals, fear of the planet was kept in bounds. When the star passed without causing harm, as it had already done for a few centuries, the peoples were calmed and felt themselves out of danger for another period. But when Venus, for some reason, began to move irregularly, fear grew intense. The priests of Iran prayed, "We sacrifice to Tistria, the bright and glorious star, for whom long flocks and herds and men, looking forward for him and deceived in their hope, when shall we see him rise up, the bright and glorious star Tistria?" The Zendavesta answered for the star, "If men would worship me with a sacrifice in which I were invoked my own name, then I should come to the faithful at the appointed time." The priests responded, "The next 10 nights, O spite armor Zarathustra, the bright and glorious Tistria mingles his shape with light, moving in the shape of a golden-horned bull." They glorified the star that made all the shores of the ocean boiling over, all the middle of it boiling over. They heaped up sacrifices to the star, imploring it not to change its course. "We sacrifice unto Tistria, the bright and glorious star who from the shining east moves along his long winding course, along the path made by the gods. We sacrifice unto Tistria the bright and glorious star, whose rising is watched by the chiefs of deep understanding." The Star of Venus did not appear in the prescribed seasons. In the Book of Job, the Lord asks him, "Canst thou bring forth Matsaroth in his season? Knowest thou changes of heaven?" There exists an extensive exegetic literature on this Matsaroth comma 12 from which it can be concluded only that the meaning of Matsaroth is uncertain. 13 But the Vulgate, Latin, translation of the Bible has Lucifer for Matsaroth. The Greek translation of the 70, Septuagint, reads, "Canst thou bring forth Matsaroth in his season and guide the evening star by his long hair?" These words of the Septuagint seem very strange. I have already mentioned that the Greek word comet means the long-haired one, or a star with hair, a comet. In Latin, coma is hair. Matsaroth means a comet, wrote an exegete, and therefore, he argued, it cannot mean Venus. But in any case it is said that the evening star has hair. Actually, Matsaroth means Venus and a hairy star. Venus ceased to appear in its seasons. What had happened? Venus becomes the morning star. Since the latter part of the 8th century before the present era, Venus has followed an orbit between Mercury and Earth, which it has maintained ever since. It became the morning and evening star. Seen from the Earth, it is never removed more than 48 degrees, when at its eastern and western elongation, or 3 hours and a few minutes east or west of the Sun. The dreaded comet became a tame planet. It has the most nearly circular orbit among the planets. The end of the terror which Venus kept alive for 8 centuries after the days of the Exodus was the inspiration for Isaiah when he said, "How art thou fallen from heaven, O Lucifer, son of the morning? How art thou cut down to the ground, which didst weaken the nations? For thou hast said in thine heart, I will ascend into heaven, I will exalt my throne above the stars of God." Septuagint and Vulgate both translate morning star or Lucifer. What does it mean, that the morning star was assailing the heavens and rising high, and that it was cut down low to the horizon, and would weaken no more the nations? More than 100 generations of commentators have occupied themselves with this passage, but have met with failure. Why, it is also asked, should the beautiful morning star, called Lucifer, the light-bearer, live in the imagination of peoples as an evil power, a fallen star? What is in this lovely planet that makes her name an equivalent of Satan, or Seth of the Egyptians, the dark power? In his confusion, Origen wrote this question to the quoted verses of Isaiah. Most evidently by these words is he shown to have fallen from heaven, who formerly was Lucifer, and who used to arise in the morning. For if, as some think, he was a nature of darkness, how is Lucifer said to have existed before? Or how could he arise in the morning, who had in himself nothing of the light? Lucifer was a feared prodigy in the sky, and its origin, as illuminated in this book, explains how it came to be regarded as a dark power and a fallen star. After a great struggle, Venus achieved a circular orbit and a permanent place in the family of planets. During the perturbations which brought about this metamorphosis, Venus also lost its cometary tail. In the valley of the Euphrates, Venus then gives up her position as a great stellar divinity, equal with Sun and Moon, and joins the ranks of the other planets. A comet became a planet. Venus was born as a comet in the second millennium before the present era. In the middle of that millennium it twice made contact with the Earth and changed its cometary orbit. In the 10th to 8th centuries of the first millennium, it was still a comet. What caused such further changes in the motion of Venus in the first millennium that it became a planet on a circular orbit? Next part of this book is about Mars in the old volumes and manuscripts.